This morning I want to talk to you about how to love a woman. You're looking at me going, seriously, you? And I have figured this out. I'm the ideal guy to talk to you about this. Because look at me. I mean, if you put it out there, this guy would be ideal. I run a doctoral program in New York. I've run it all this week. I had students in from, I think, 8 countries and 9 culture groups. And a couple of these, when I mentioned this kind of research and what I was going to be talking to you, I had some young chaps who said, can I have the material? And I said, no. They go, why not? And I said, you can't deliver it. A, you're not old enough. B, you're too good looking. And C, you've not lived enough yet. And if we want to do D, you're not enough of a man, which nobody thanked me for. So let's talk about what it's like to love a woman. No matter if you're 16, and some of you are here, or if you're 86, Mark's just given us a great reminder of we don't live alone. We live with each other. We live in community. And none of us have suddenly appeared on the planet alone. We've come from someplace. And most all of us will have connections with people who are different than us. And very often, the opposite gender. So let me talk about being a man, and then what it's like to actually love a woman, if I may. When I first started to conceptualize this material, it was a little over a year and a half ago. And I thought, I work with men literally around the world. And I thought, how am I going to frame this? My wife had passed, and I knew, do I do the aging man of wisdom, the widower who stopped just short of 42 years when his wife passed? And I thought, nobody really cares. I thought, how about if I do sort of the professional development guy who's done work with probably 2,500 couples? Should I do that? Then I just seem like I'm talking big. So I thought, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to survey a couple thousand women and ask them how they want to be loved, and then report it to you. So I've gotten over 500 done. I'm shooting for 2,500 or 2,000. It's just popular level research. I'll give you the questions in just a minute. But I wanted to identify, what do women say they want? And then pass it on to blokes like you. So either you're welcome, or I'm sorry, you decide in the next 35 or 40 minutes which it is. Let's just talk about what it's like to be a man first. In the Hebrew word language, there are 6 different words used for men. These come to us in the older testament of the Bible. They've been around long before we read a Bible. These words have been around. The first word that just shows up early in what we would call the book of Genesis is the creational man, Adam. It's built into us, this idea of creating, of becoming, even of reproducing. This is the part of us that's made in the image of God. And so when you meet with your band of brothers, when just a couple of you meet, or if it's a whole table full or room full, to talk about what's it like when we're at our best, this is the creational part of us. The second one is the phallic male, the sexualized part of us. It's interesting that the Bible uses this early on. We are created as men who have unique sexual drive. We're not expected to be anything else. We're expected to deal with it responsibly, but there's no way we're to play this down. Having worked with thousands of men on every continent, discover that the challenge is some of us get stuck in this stage of life. Or we focus on this one like it's the only part or the best part of us. Having done these talks in various places that are tougher, I go, guys, you can't define yourself ever by this part of you. Make it a good and a healthy and a strong. Make it a fun part of you, but don't ever, ever make this part of your absolute identity. And certainly don't make it part of your image. Make it a strength of yours. Don't make it the place where you stay and play. But use it well. God wouldn't expect you to do anything else. The third word is the warrior. The Bible creates images of this very well. We've got these from images from antiquity. Every culture has the warrior image. It's why movies like Braveheart played and still play. Every culture has its variation of these kind of images and movies and presentations. It's the warrior. It's the strength of a man. It's the competitive aspect of a man. It's the one that makes us want to win. It's what investment communities are made of. It's what professional sports are made of. I've done some research I'm hoping to publish before too long. I've surveyed 1,800 young men from 11 countries and asked them what they wish could have been different with their fathers. Across cultures, it's pretty identical what young men are wishing was different in the relationship with dads, but one stands out as much or more than anything else. Here's one of the things young men say: why does my dad always have to win? Now, if you're a dad, let that one sink in. Why do you always have to win? Whether you think you do or not, those who count on you are sometimes going, why the stories like this? A guy say, my dad is 60 and he still cheats in order to win. Yes, some of us never grow up. It's the warrior side. It's built into us. Again, a strength, but only if it stays a strength. If it doesn't stay a strength, then you know what it becomes. The fourth one is the wounded male, one none of us want to talk about. In Tony's introduction, I've been to hell and back a few times in my life. May make another trip, who knows? In my mind, I'm still young enough, I may have to go there again. I don't know. But it's how you come through the wounded stage that makes a difference of where you go. Again, even in the unique sort of movies and cultural presentations of things like Braveheart and others, they always give images of somebody who takes the shot and still keeps going. But sometimes you have to take the shot and you just go, no, I can't keep going on this one. And that's when you need people around you. I have just had great friends in the last number of years. They've helped me through so many things. We've counted on each other, and we still do. We meet regularly. I mentioned I run a doctor program. I am discovering how strange it is how many people want to come in the program, not because they need a doctorate. They're already president of whatever it is they're doing. They're lonely, and they want in. And they sit around a fire with us and have deep conversations and smoke elite cigars, not just cigars, good ones. And they sit around and go, you guys have no idea how good this is. I go, yeah, we kind of do. And they go, no, you don't. Nobody has this. You can create it. You can create your own. As you go through this wounded stage, it takes you to the next two. The final two images of men that are given to us in the Old Testament are the mature male. The mature male is the guy who's gone through the wounded stage and actually learned something from it. He doesn't just tell the story like, I've been there. He's actually got some insight that came from it. He got through it pretty well. Still beat up, but got through it. At this stage, it's when we have the absolute confidence to make our greatest contribution in community, in family, in church, wherever we are. We get a chance to make our greatest contribution. Some of you will hit it early on in life, and some of you it'll take you till the last decade of your life to get here. The final one is the sage, the man of wisdom. I was one of those guys who couldn't wait till I turned 50. A bunch of you are going, I still lie, I'm 50, but I don't admit it. to myself or to anybody else. I couldn't wait till I turned 50 because I felt like I had stuff to say to men, but I couldn't say it until I was one of them. And so even a decade before, I'm going, when I hit 50, here's some stuff I want to say. Let me talk about the sage for just a minute. Men of wisdom talk less, but say more. Men of wisdom don't dispense their opinions. By the way, as you start to get older, have you noticed how few people come to you and say, "Mate, give me all your opinions about my life"? Has anybody got family members who come and go, "Dad, tell me what you think about me"? Yeah, it's typically not what they do. They don't care about our opinions, but they'd love our wisdom. And so the key is to translate this. I like being a man of wisdom. I don't have to talk as much. I just make noises. People make statements and I go, "Oh, ooh." Here's my favorite, You don't have to say a word. You just make noises. So let's transition. Now that you have figured out manhood, at least to this level, and figuring where am I stage-wise, what's the next one? What do I adjust to get there? Now let's talk about how do you bring out the best in a woman. Originally, when I did this material, I thought it would be six sort of 12 to 15 minute talks. By the way, you're the first group in the U.S. I've done this with. I've done it in four other countries, so you're an experiment. Thanks for laughing, mostly appropriately. We'll keep going and see. So we're moving material, shrinking it down so you don't have to be here all morning. My role is to just report what has been given to me by, at this stage, a little over 500 women. And be a bit of a coach. Let's start with the overview of how this came about. 15 years ago, I had done a group of men's things in Princeton, New Jersey. And I did a men's night and said, you can bring the woman of your life. If that's your wife, your partner, your girlfriend, please don't bring your mama. It's just sad. But for some of you, you'll come alone if you don't bring her, so go ahead. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. She can't ask any questions. You can ask questions. She can't. It killed the women not to ask questions. So immediately I get a call from the women who were there and said, we want you to do a conference for women about men in Princeton. I'm going, no man would do that. And I said, that's not a real conference, come on. And they said, well, what would you do? So I gave them a whole series of topics. And for fun, the last suggestion was how to be a passionate lover. That's the one they wanted. So 15 years ago, it was me and 500 women in Princeton for an entire day. I was the only speaker on how to be a passionate lover. I don't know of any man who would ever take that on. I said to Diana, you have to come with me for two reasons. One, they're going to turn and look at you all the time. Please don't make terrible faces. And secondly, in case this thing goes bad, you're my driver. You got to get me out of there. Who knows what's going to happen? It was the best question and answer time I've ever had. But it taught me a lot about what women think and how to present that to men if I ever get a chance. In my extended family, I've never lived near them. I'm some 500 miles away at least from my nephews and my nieces and their husbands. And my brother and brother-in-law, by their own admission, probably weren't great dads. So it was part of my job as the uncle to mentor the next generation of Sanders. And so I've taken it on pretty seriously. As a matter of fact, I will drive southwest of Cleveland late tomorrow and have dinner with the extended family and have conversations with them. When my youngest nephew got married a couple years ago, I was actually in Europe and couldn't be there. And when I got back, it was the end of their honeymoon, and I got a call from his wife. They'd been married a little over a week, and she goes, Uncle Martin, I just want to say thank you. Thanks for mentoring my husband. Thanks for teaching him how to be a man. And then she paused, and you could tell her voice was cracking. She goes, thanks for teaching him how to love a woman. I said, you've been married 9 days. Either your expectations are low, he's good, or I'm amazing. So I've got a long history of trying to figure this out and interpret across the genders and go, what do we do with this? So let me pass on a bit of understanding. Here's just some observations. We're going to talk about listening, which most of us, it may not be our greatest strength. So we'll talk just a bit about that. And then I want to report to you what women say they want. So let's move ahead with the research, what women say they want. If we can summarize it, it's quite fascinating to me how there's not great insights into what women say they want. My first weekend of doing this, I surveyed on a Friday night. I surveyed 37 young Asian women in Queens, from mid-20s to mid-30s. The next morning, I'd set up an appointment and had a number of women, it ended up being almost 70, at an old school hair salon in Brooklyn. The women there were predominantly Roman Catholic and Polish and Italian. The young ones were in their early 50s. The older ones were in their 80s. Here's what I found interesting. There was very little statistical variations between the young Asian women and the women who were 40 to 50 years older and Polish and Italian. That continues to be the point. There's not much variation. I have to tell you one story. I was in the old school hair salon having a conversation with a woman who helped me set it up. She was probably late 40s. There was a woman watching us very carefully. She had to be in her early 80s. And she'd picked up that I was a widower. And as I started to leave, she reached up and she grabbed my forearm. And she said to me, if she doesn't take you, I will. And I said, hon, my sense is you'd take me anyway. And she winked at me. She goes, you're good. I needed to get out of there rapidly. So I just want to give you the four questions I start with. This is popular level research. This is just, let's just get it out there and not be in terribly detailed in how we do this. Just four simple questions on the questionnaire. What makes you feel the most loved? And again, it's not great variations. It's the security, respect, love. What I find interesting is every survey you do, women say they want a guy who's funny and laughs. But they have to think it's funny. Not just you think it's funny. By the way, level of laughter, level of guilt often go together. So there you go, guys. Number two, what one thing I'd like my guy to understand about me? And they have something very specific. Number three, what one thing makes it hard to love or trust him? I'll come back to that one in just a minute. And I would want to love and be loved by him more if. Here's what I noticed about how women report this. If you are in a community of faith, no matter what the faith is, Jewish, Roman Catholic, Christian, generalized Protestant, it sort of doesn't matter. If you come from that, there's a different set of values than if you have no faith whatsoever. The second piece is the socioeconomic piece. So here's what is reported. If you're outside of realms of faith community and you're at a lower socioeconomic level, women talk about they don't feel physically safe. Domestic violence still reigns. And if it's not actual violence, the threat of it still feels awkward. And the other piece is when he's had too much to drink and comes home, they sometimes don't even finish the sentence. Guys, the people that are part of us have to feel safe with us. Whatever anger issues you have, whatever other issues you have, deal with them in a group like this. Do not deal with them at home. Make sense? Take care of it. And if you've got a mate near you that you know has challenges there, talk to him. Talk to him. The people who love us most are counting on us being people they can be safe with. We got to take care of that. If on the other side, you're at a higher level of socioeconomics, not even high, just not near the bottom, and there's a part of a faith community, what women start to think about, because safety is already met, safety and security, it goes towards emotional security. So then it gets a little bit tougher, because that's when they want you to perform at a higher level. And that's when you go, oh, now it gets tough. I got two coaching points. Stick with me. In the next 12 minutes, you'll get all of it. I promise. Let's keep going. The final one is what I would like in order to feel more loved. And this is where women write some very specific things. I'll report just a couple of them. The old Maslow hierarchy of needs. Some of you heard that when you were in high school or college and go, when will I ever use that? Are you ready? Today! Today! It's just this simple. At a basic human level, I need to feel safe and secure. And if I don't, we've already addressed that. You'll take care of that. There's sometimes a deprivation in the human development where you just didn't learn how to do those kind of deep emotion, and so she needs a little extra. Your job is to provide as much as that as is possible from your own life. And I want to talk about guarding the heart. In the old days, a long time ago, but it's also still around in churches like this, as a part of a wedding ceremony, there was a question, who gives this woman to be married to this man? Remember that? Now, starting in the 70s with women's movements on up until today, there's pushback on that, like, her father doesn't own her. No man gives her away. That's not what this is about. Historically, the reason that was included is it's a father's responsibility to guard the heart of his daughter. And so when he stands there before community and family and God, when it says, who gives this woman? He actually says, I've done a good job. I've done my job at caring and guarding and protecting the heart of my daughter. And then he turns it over and says, buddy, it's your job now. Do it well. And so your job is to help protect that soft heart. One of the reasons I got started doing these things called Executive Couples Coaching Conference. I've got one coming up in 3 weeks. It's at the Ritz-Carlton someplace in Florida. And it's started out with Wall Street crowd and finance people. And here's how it got started. Guys were coming up to me going, Martin, I need help in my marriage. I always want to be kind, and I go, yeah, that's what she says. By the way, level of laughter, level of guilt often go together. And I said, buddy, let's talk about you. Well, tell me what's going on. They go, she's just really bitchy. Yeah, I understand. I said, let's talk. Mate, you're a smart guy, right? Yeah, very. Okay. If she was bitchy back then, you wouldn't have married her? So somehow, you're a smart guy, but somehow being married to you, she got that way. So we've got to figure out what it is about you that brings out the worst in an amazing woman. And they looked at me like, dude, I thought you were on my side. I am, but we've got to figure out there's something missing here. Because you're too smart to have married her if she was like this then. And they always looked confused, like, I think you're right. I just don't want to admit to this one. And so we had to say, what is it that brings out the best and the worst? Let's just talk for a moment about the power of words. Words and their tone make a world of difference. You know that. But boy, it's hard to catch yourself. Again, I think one of the great strengths of what you are doing here is that you get a chance to sort of walk through, talk through, even if you're not a talker, just to be able to go, I've got to identify what's that stuff I leave behind so I don't take it to the people who count on me the most and that I love the most. The power of words and of tone. Let's talk about how to be a good date. The first four times I presented this, all in a different country, when I was done, the vast majority of men didn't stop talking to me. Nobody wanted to talk to me, but they would swing by on the way out and go, I'm a bad date. And every part of me wanted to go, yeah, that's what she said. But they identified. So let's talk about what it means to be a good date. A good date does this. You present your best. First of all, you make a date. You keep it. And you present your best. And that is, you're interesting, you're charming, you're suave, whatever yours is. You've got your own words. Use them. You win her love. You win her affection again. You're fun. You're interesting. You laugh. It's not complex. A little over a year ago, I get a call from a guy that I'd known. He was probably in his 40s now. Knew him when he was early 20s, probably. He was living in Eastern Europe. And somehow, he's Canadian, and somehow he got over there and got connected to a woman who's one of the sort of pop stars of that Eastern European country. How he got her, I have no idea. Apparently in Eastern Europe, he looks better than he does in North America. I'm being very kind here. I wanted to warn her and say, be careful, your children are going to look like puppies. But so I'm on the phone with him. He sends an email. He's not doing great. And so I get him on the phone. And I'm listening to him. He goes, Martin, I'm ready to go out and do something inappropriate. He goes, I'm going to do this. And it's not fun at home. I'm not getting enough. All the phrases, you've heard them. Some of you have said them. And I listened to him for a little bit, and I remembered how not good looking he was and thought, this isn't going to be as easy as you think. But I said to him, mate, let's play along. Let's play along. If you decide tomorrow night you're going to go out and try to score with some woman, let's talk about it. What are you going to do? You're going to spend tomorrow. You're going to plan a lot. You're going to go get a good haircut. Gonna go buy a new shirt. You're gonna get cleaned up. You're gonna look and smell your best. You're gonna go out. You're gonna spend a bunch of money. You're gonna put your best foot forward. And hopefully by the end of the night, you score something. And then the next morning, who knows what you've gotten? Now, let's take the same scenario. You spend all day planning to take your wife out. You get a sitter. You go get a good haircut. You buy a shirt. You buy something for her. You come home. You get cleaned up. You take her to a great place. You spend money on her. You put your best self forward. The same way you're going to try to win some woman in a club, do it with your wife again. You think you won't get lucky, buddy? Come on. Come on, this isn't rocket science. Dead silence on the other end. He goes, why didn't I think of this? And I said, because you're Canadian. And let's be honest, you're living in Eastern Europe. Dude, you never were that smart. Think about it. When's the last time you were a really good date? Like a really good date. Come on. It takes so little, but you got to do it. So let's talk about loving, being love, making love. Sex is one of those things the old book says it begins in the kitchen. It's like how you come home, how you help prep, how you clean up, how you do dishes. Women report that man in their life is really sexy when he does the dishes. Not one of you thinks like that. It's like, tonight, babe, I'm going to do the dishes. If you do, teach everybody else at your table, please, please. It's the little stuff like the calls, the texts, a card. It's the little stuff that makes a difference. So what does the survey say? Let me wrap this up for us. The survey says words matter a lot. Timing is just about everything. Emotional tone matters so much. Forgive me, but lots of women bring up smells. She doesn't like how you smell. When you were dating, you took care of that. Now you're at this stage of life, dude, take care of it. Take care of it. It's funny how often it comes up. Creating a setting and touch, not grab, not mash and grab. Meaningful. Touch. You know love languages. We're not going to spend any time on them, but let's just go over them one more time so we're on the same page and create common language. Don't assume you know these. Don't assume you've got them pegged. It's gifts. It's quality time. It's words of affirmation, confirmation, validation. It's acts of service. Sometimes you've reduced them to sometimes things called like a honey-do list. They've got all sorts of phrases. And then physical touch. Don't assume that the woman in your life, you've got her pegged and you know what hers are, because sometimes they change. Sometimes they need updated. Sometimes she adds one. Diana never liked jewelry at all. I had to get out of jail free card. I never had to buy any jewelry. It was great. Until 34 years into the marriage, and she decided she wanted jewelry. I said, what kind of jewelry do you want? She goes, I don't know. Surprise me. So I did. It wasn't good. I said, can you give me a hint? She goes, I'll know it when I see it. Now, this turned into a not good thing. So I started going around and I noticed women's jewelry, which I had never done in my whole life. And so I would go up to women and say, can I ask where you got that jewelry? Oh, you have to listen for a long time if you ask that question. I was actually in the mall one time, saw these two well-dressed women and thought, I'm going to go look at their jewelry, not in a creepy way, but just go look. And I said to one, I think that's the kind of jewelry my wife would like. Where'd you get it? Without missing a beat, she grabbed me by the hand. She says, come on. She took me shopping. No, just give me the store name. That's all I want. I do not want to walk through the mall with you holding my hand. Please. It took a while. We both figured out what jewelry looked like. After 34 years together. One more thing about these. Just a word of caution. You've got to move beyond the love language. Because sometimes we do it as another task. I did three things for her this week. I said two nice things. I've actually had women say, you said you wanted touched. I touched you four times. So heartfelt. You get the point. You've got to move beyond just doing the task. So let's identify how to love her the way she wants to be loved, no matter who she is, no matter what it's like. Enter her world. Try to understand her. Most of that comes from listening, longer than you want to, honestly. create some good environments. It's about being the good date. Little things make the most difference. We've said that. And don't forget security. Here's what women report. When I can trust you, we're both at our best. When I feel secure, you get the absolute best of me. Don't forget that one, guys. When you love me for me, it's hard for you to imagine how important that is. When you love me well, they report, I will want to make love to you. Here's the summary statement of so many of the surveys. If you love me the way I want to be loved, I will want to make love to you. Don't love me the way that I want to be loved. Dot, dot, dot. Oh, dear God. It's kind of that simple, gentlemen. Now, here's the other side of it that's just really useful. If you learn how to love well, you'll become a better man. You'll become a better son of God. Because a lot of us do better at serving God than loving him. And if you've read your Bible at all, he says, no, I need you to love me, mate. I need you to love me. And so it's time to up the love quotient in the room. So identify what parts about you and what parts about her. Let's just say it like it is across the board. You might be easy. She reports that often. It doesn't take much to make you happy. Unless you're one that's hard to make happy, and then that's different. You may be easy. You may not be too complex. You may be a bit too self-focused and self-oriented. But if you will follow through with what you know, you'll follow through with what you know is true and right. You'll go a long, long way. So here's the final statement. How to love a woman? Love her the way she wants to be loved, and you will get the absolute best. Don't, and she said it well, oh dear God. My final statement to you. To be a man that those closest to you can respect you at the highest level. They can count on you. They know you're on their team. You know you're there with them and for them. And when you do, you'll get a lot out of this too. Actually, more than you get if you're in this for yourself. So here's what I'd like to do as we wrap up. Just take the next few minutes at your table. Since we are in a church, we can do this. So much about realms of faith are two things. There's always something to leave behind. Whenever you do communion in the historic Christian tradition, whenever you do communion, there's always something to leave behind. And secondly, there's always something to embrace, something new to start, a new track, a new path, a new commitment, a new saying yes to something good. So we have at your table something to write with if you want to. Now, I've done enough of these to recognize men are, some of you are talkers, and some of you would rather write it down and not talk. If you want to write, write it down. If you want to talk, talk about it. What are you going to leave behind? And what are you going to start? Go.